Today I want to convey the idea that we are destroying our next generation by keeping them from working. We have created at least two generations that believe it is more virtuous to get an education than by working, than by giving a service that benefits your neighbor. In today's world, Western civilization has made the determination that you need to go to college in order to be anything, in order to amount to anything. Unfortunately, those of us in the church, some of us, have bought into this. And we have built this idea that we need to get a college education. Whether it's the liberal fascists who created labor laws or the humanists who helped create the compulsory education, these secular ideas are wreaking havoc on our young people. My concern in all this is that we have two going on three generations that have lost their desire to work. And in reality, we have entire generations that are more concerned about pleasure than fulfilling their God-ordained duty of working. As a society, we've lost our future by creating soft, feminized men who no longer want to take dominion. We need to turn back to teaching our children the value of working and what it means to do a job well done. In Exodus 35:2, we read, 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day there shall be to you a holy day, a Sabbath of rest to the Lord. Whosoever doeth work therein shall be put to death. The Apostle Paul in 2 Thessalonians 3:10 states, for even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat. It's time for us to start changing this. We need to have a paradigm shift. We need to engage people and get them to realize that young adults were designed to work. They were designed by God to be productive. Citizens of society, and they were designed to work at a young age. Biblical scholars say maybe 13 was the age of adulthood. I believe Richard Steele has it right when he quotes Genesis 2:15. And the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and keep it. Richard Steele goes on to comment, if a noble birth, as one observes, a great estate, a small family, and a mind fitted for contemplation would excuse man from labor, none had so fair a plea as he, speaking of Adam. In other words, it doesn't matter how wealthy you are, how prestigious you are, or how brilliant you are. Adam was better off than you were before the fall, so we need to get to work. Richard Steele also talks about our duty of working 6 days is as much of a command as keeping the Sabbath day holy. He quotes Exodus 23:12. 6 days thou shalt do thy work, and on the seventh day thou shalt rest, that thine ox and thine ass may rest, and that the son of thy handmaid and the stranger may be refreshed. And goes on to say, in this it is plainly implied that all should fill their time with some proper employment, from one season of rest to another. For it is obvious to remark that the obligation to labor 6 days is expressed in as general terms and is bound upon us by the same authority as the religious observation of the seventh. If these observations are then correct and true, then a 13-year-old boy should technically be working and shouldn't be sitting in a classroom. This is a generalization. I understand that because I do believe that higher education is necessary for some things. Doctors, lawyers, maybe. However, young adults should be working and not sitting in a classroom, especially our young men. Young adults are especially prone to the vices of idleness. Not that we all aren't. Most of us are. As adults, some of us struggle with idleness. However, I believe those struggles are often a byproduct of our upbringing. Maybe being idle in school for too long, or not having to work as young adults. Another quote by Richard Steele, he says it perfectly, I think. He said, 1,000 vices are produced by idleness. The human mind without exercise, like standing water, soon grows corrupt. And a life spent in cheerful service to God, of God, and usefulness to mankind will doubtless yield a more pleasant reflection in the decline of years, or the prospect of death, than time trifled away in inactivity and doing nothing. While we may be reformed or have biblical theology, I believe pagan thought about work has crept into our churches, into our homes, into our own lifestyles. So why do we work? What is the chief end when we consider work? Is it to glorify God and serve our neighbor? Or is it to glorify me, myself, and I? From John Preston, we must labor not for our own good, but for the good of others. If this is the case, then our employment or businesses are a part of the Great Commission. In other words, our work or the things we do from Monday to Saturday are just as important as what we do on Sunday. Also, from another well-known reformer, Richard Baxter, he says, "Choose that employment or calling in which you may be most serviceable to God. Choose not that which you may be most rich or honorable in the world, but that in which you may do the most good. In choosing a trade or calling, the first consideration should be the service of God and the public good. And therefore, that calling that most conduces to the public good is to be preferred." Gustav Wengren, he writes in his book called Luther on Vocation, he's quoting Luther, and he says, "God does not need our good works, but our neighbor does." So is this how we approach the daily grind, the things that we do in those hours we call work? If not, it begs the question, how will our children ever learn to work, learn that work is a biblical mandate, that it is to honor God and serve our neighbor? If we look at these things as mundane or as undesirable or as below us, how are they going to figure it out? What are we going to do? What are we going to change? Deuteronomy 6:7 commands us, "You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." While this may be talking about God's commandments, His laws and statutes, I believe it incorporates work and our dominion mandate. What does that look like in today's world? Especially with compulsory education, labor laws, these tyrannical laws that keep us from fulfilling those biblical duties. In the Humanist magazine of 1983, John Dunphy revealed the agenda of the public education. Most of you are probably familiar with it. But he says, "I am convinced that the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public school classroom by teachers who correctly perceive their roles as the proselytizers of a new faith, a religion of humanity that recognizes and respects the spark of what theologians call divinity in every human being." End quote. So it begs the question, why would society create laws that prohibit someone from working and ban them from fulfilling their biblical duties? Why would they do that, while at the same time mandating that they sit in a classroom 180 days a year for 12 years of their life? And in reality, we got to realize it is the enemy attacking our most vulnerable battle lines, our next generation. And this attack is a direct attack on the dominion mandate. It reduces our authority. It gives a secular and the humanist state control. It's a state that wants full control. Control over our homes, our work, and our children. In an article for the Foundation for Economic Education, Carrie McDonald writes, "Compulsory schooling was meant to save children from the dangerous conditions of the factory, but these days traditional schooling is easily just as dangerous as to children's well-being." She goes on to say, "In the early 20th century, concern about children's welfare and in oppressive factories was a primary catalyst for enacting child labor laws and simultaneously tightening compulsory schooling laws. She goes on to say, yet for many of today's children, the time they spend in forced schooling environments is both cruel and hazardous to their health. Gone are the oppressive factories, but in their place are oppressive schools. Where's our outrage? A century ago, we invented a system that imagined children as civic soldiers. Kids bolted to chairs with absolutely no skin in the game. They have abstract information pounded into their heads by tax-paid instructors who teach them from state-approved books. We push these kids through a system and deny them any chance to realize their human value and gainful employment in a community of productivity and learning. And then we tell them to scrape together $100,000 for yet another degree that will somehow gain them entry into the workforce. And then, we as great citizens of the state, we look at newspaper pictures from 1905, and we look at these boys who are shining shoes, and we say, how sad that these kids had to work. We're so much more humane right now, aren't we? It's time we stop congratulating ourselves. We're taking these opportunities away from these young adults. Let's let them work. So you ask, what can we do? How do we instill work ethic into the next generation? God has called us to work. He has called us to cultivate His creation. We are to do that in many different ways. Some of us as laborers, some as theologians, some intellectuals. We could go on and on. However, the mandate is there. In Genesis 1:26, and God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air, over the cattle and over all the earth, and over the creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. Most everyone here is familiar with that. I don't think I need to explain it. But that mandate, in tandem with Deuteronomy 6:7, is the beginning of understanding what we need to do to shift the paradigm from compulsory education and tyrannical labor laws to teaching our young adults that it is their biblical duty to work in a service that honors God and benefits their neighbor. From Christopher J. Ortez in an article on calcedon.edu, he says, the Dominion Mandate was essentially an entrepreneurial calling. Although man's ultimate employer was God Himself, Adam was very much on his own terms of the discovery and work process. God immediately engaged Adam in labor, and when a companion was created for him, she even was categorized as a helpmeet. In short, work and mission were central to man and history. God was an entrepreneur, and He intended that His highest creation would follow suit in the family business. Christ made this doubly clear when He testified that He must be about His Father's business. Luke 2:49, end quote. So let's start with ourselves. Next week, when we go back to work, would it be too much to ask if we were to look at our work as serving our neighbor? Maybe that's your employer. Maybe it's your coworkers, your family, your wife. Who knows? But can we look at it as a service, as serving our neighbor? And can we teach our children the same? How about we take dominion? Let's make sure that we are doing it to the glory of God and promoting His kingdom. And then let's take that on to our young children. Let's first eliminate the entertainment and childish activities. Let's teach them to work. One of the things I struggle with, you know, I have a 2-year-old. I struggle with letting him walk around with a screwdriver. You know, the drywall. I don't want him touching that. Or a DeWalt battery. He wants to help. He wants to work. He says, Daddy, I'm watching you. I want to work. But myself says, no, son, you're just going to make more of a mess. We need to quit that. We need to let them work. So once we teach our children that it is their biblical duty to work and to provide a service to their neighbor, we can do that by teaching them how to babysit, maybe to mow the lawn, wash your vehicles. There's many other household chores. But we start that at a young age. Maybe around the age of 13, depending on your child, we start creating weekly duties that are their jobs. They may be more complex. We may throw in things like husbandry or raising animals or chickens or goats or something like that. And we should start considering that they work outside of the home. I believe there's a lot of things that they can do. These jobs at home, they can be entrepreneurial jobs. There's so many things that children of a young age can do. Like raising animals is one of the things that I did. I at one point had about 300 rabbits. And that was really my first entrepreneurial endeavor. So these things like husbandry are a great thing. But mom and dad should not be subsidizing these things. They shouldn't be taking care of these animals. It's the child's duty. They should be learning how to work. And it's a perfect opportunity to instill that capitalistic value into your children. Maybe you live in a city. Local authorities won't allow animals. There's other things like shoveling snow, mowing yards, taking your trash out for your elderly neighbors. You may need to get more creative, but they need to work. Around 12 to 14, we might want to start getting them a secondary job. Chick-fil-A, local produce farm. Somewhere where they'll be working with a team of others so that they can learn the value of working as a team. These jobs are going to prepare them. Because not everyone is a natural entrepreneur, but it will help your young adult make that decision. And I say this because everyone should have the opportunity, I believe. There are statistics out there that say that only 4% of the people are entrepreneurs. I would say, no way. I think there's much higher percentages. We just don't give people the opportunities. What we must realize, if there's one thing that you hear from me, that critical age of 8 to 14 will most likely determine how your young adult will transition from that age to a fully functional, dominion-taking, kingdom-minded adult. Mom and Dad, it's your duty. It's your job to teach them. When you sit down, when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. Thank you.